part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right. All right. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, it's spring break, so I took the week off to be with my family and stuff because my kid is out of school and just suffering from some weird fatigue today. I don't know what's going on, but I'm fine other than that. So
good.
I think I've been staying up too late to watch Daredevil.
Oh my God. It's so good.
It really is. It really is. So, all right. So this is Part-Time Fanboy. And I am Christian Horn, and I am here with my friend Jason Holtham, and the rest of the crew is off for spring break, apparently. but we are here to talk about the big, bad, beautiful thing that just premiered on Netflix this weekend, Daredevil Season 2. Diablo.
Two.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's so, you're right, like, it's so, so good. I'm up to, I think what we should do, because we've already agreed with some of the other guys to, like, break it up into two, like we usually do, because some of us have, you know, we all have lives, and you can't get through 13 episodes of just one TV show.
Nope.
You know, in one weekend. I know that there are people out there who can, but that's why this is called Part-Time Fanboy. So, but at this point, I've seen up to the end of episode 8. Just to let you know where I'm at. Where did you finish the whole thing? Because you said, like, I'm pretty close to finishing.
I'm pretty close. I've got two episodes. I'm two episodes out.
Wow. Yeah, it's been really, like, this show is so good. So the thing is like, my wife and I, we watch TV together, and but my wife has this habit of, you know, she works really hard. she falls asleep in front of the TV, and like a good husband, I usually, if she'll fall asleep, I'll turn whatever I'm watching off and be like, you know, we'll watch together if it's something that we watch together. I have not been good with Daredevil. I've been like, you know what? You're on your own. Like, this is so, it's so good that I'm just like, I got to keep going, man. I got to keep going. The first night, Friday night, and I don't know about you, but for me, like, Friday nights, just being a dad, whatever, I get home and Friday nights, like, I'm tired. Like, you know, but I watched 3 episodes in one sitting, and I haven't done something like that in a long time.
I didn't expect to be like this into it and like and this all about it, because I liked season 1. I really liked it. I wasn't as crazy about it as some people.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved season 1. I liked it. Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I mean, and then of course, you know, after season 1, then Jessica Jones happened. And Jessica Jones, I thought, was so good.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, it'll be season 2. It'll be fine. It'll be good. You know, we'll get the Punisher. We get Elektra. Whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then I've been like, oh my God, I have to keep watching. Like, all of the cliffhanger episode endings have been amazing. And I feel like this season, even more than last season, they've been great about endings that say, I have to see what happens next.
Yeah,
I have to know.
It's interesting because there's some people online who keep saying, like, it's a sophomore slump, or they don't think it's that great. And then there's other people who are like, wow, this was a really big improvement. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I actually think, like, it's on par, like, with last season. I mean, I think last season was really solid. I think the one weakness, it's really weird to say that the one weakness was Vincent D'Onofrio's character to a certain extent, because you sort of, like, I understood where the Kingpin was coming from, but they were sort of making him sort of like this really weird, disconnected with his emotions. Like, some of the Kingpin stuff would throw me off every once in a while. And then when you superimposed it with what was going on with, like, Matt in the first mm-hmm. season, but like in this season, like I really feel like they've given Matt a solid narrative to like cling on to, and there's no sort of the wishy-washiness of like season one. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, no, I know exactly. And then, like, it's good. They moved on from there. He resolved the sort of moral issue with being Daredevil. And this season is a lot more about, like, how does he balance being Daredevil and also being Matt Murdock?
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, last season was whether or not he should be Daredevil at all. And, like, I'm glad they dispensed with that. And I think the Punisher... I'm still a huge fan of Vincent D'Onofrio's take on the Kingpin, but I know what you're saying about, you know, they went sort of the autistic route with him.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I think worked, but it's great watching, you know, John Bernthal's having such fun with the Punisher.
Oh, yeah.
It's so different than the kinds of Punishers we've ever seen.
Well, it's so funny because I'm thinking, like, Daredevil season two, you might as well call it Punisher season one at the same time. Because it's honestly, like, and that's the thing that I worry, at least, God, I have, like, so many thoughts about this whole thing. But the thing that I fear, like, you know, I went back and I started watching some of those Bruce Timm Superman episodes. I have them on DVD, but they're also available free on Amazon, just like in prep for what we're planning on possibly doing next week. But, you know, going through the listings for the Superman show, you would start, like, whenever writers don't know what to do with Superman, it becomes like a guest star, a palooza. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's like Aquaman guest stars and Dr. Fate guest stars. Oh, look, here's the demon. Look, we just don't know what to do with Superman, okay? Like, you know, and the thing is like, that's what I kind of worry about, like, Daredevil season two, that in a way he is being overshadowed. But in also a way, I really think that the Punisher has given the Daredevil character sort of this strength of character, right? Like a backbone in a way.
It's a backbone. It's something to resist. I mean, it does get into, I find, it gets into to some sticky sort of moral questions about, like, superheroes in some ways, good ways, but in some ways also about, like, the portrayals, because, you know, we watch there's actually one specific sequence where I was like, this is an interesting sort of presentation here, where Daredevil tortures a bad guy lightly. I mean, it's light torture.
Dick Cheney. Okay, Dick Cheney.
a little minor torture, and then we are immediately in a scene where Punisher is graphically tortured to get information. And I'm like, gets a little harder to parse, you know, especially with, like, you know, all of the violence. The fight sequences are amazing.
They're
amazing. But I mean, watching it, I'm like, Daredevil, you're beating the crap out of these guys, and I'm reasonably sure some of these guys died from their injuries.
Or were, like, permanently injured.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely some permanent
Some of those
paralysis.
Guys are not walking. Yeah, exactly.
And is that really so different than the Punisher just shooting guys in the head, as he does a lot of?
It's interesting because I think that this show, more than any other superhero show that more so than any other superhero mm-hmm. show or the movies – or any of that stuff, especially with this season, has really gotten into the whole thing of, like, is what I am doing right? Are my methods better than your methods? How far can we go? What is the law? You know, because that's always a question that I had reading comic books. Like, the law in their universe cannot be the same as the law in our universe. You know what I mean? Because, you know, people would be getting sued left and right. There would be, like, superhero insurance. Nobody would want to live in New York City. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's even a line in, like, Daredevil where they're interviewing jury people for the Punishers. And the guy's like, I just moved to New York City. I'm like, why did you just move to New York City? There was an alien invasion. There's no way.
2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
2 years ago. The whole city was leveled.
Exactly. You would, unless, like, property values just, like, plummeted, right?
That's true. That's probably how that went. But also, how do you sue a superhero? I mean, I'm sure if they catch Daredevil, there would be a lot of lawsuits.
Oh,
A
yeah.
lot of guys would be suing.
Yeah. And that's something that Daredevil's explored too. I mean, like in the Bendis run, where his identity got outed a little bit, or they were, the press was like saying that Matt Murdock was Daredevil and, he squirreled his way out of it eventually. But, that's one of the things that Daredevil has always, been about, sort of the guilt and like, what if you get outed, man? Like, you're a lawyer.
Exactly. And I'm glad that, for that great chunk of the Punisher trial of this, that they also foregrounded Matt as a lawyer and brought us back to that place of the comics where Matt Murdock is like the superhero lawyer. And I would love, I mean, obviously, he's not going to be able to get the guys from the movies in the show, but I would love to see like every year him have to defend some other superhero
That'd
in
be
some
great.
way.
Yeah.
Like, that would be great, like, to build it around that to a certain degree.
It's so funny because I was watching this and there's a part of me that's like, oh man, wouldn't have you remember that classic Daredevil, like Frank Miller cover with like Wolverine, and he's like Wolverine and he's like got his claws through some guy, and it Daredevil's in the background and it's something like Wolverine's in town or something, and Daredevil's not so happy that he's not so sure he's happy about it, or something like that. I can't remember, and it's like vague in my memory, but just imagine Hugh Jackman showing up or something like
Oh,
that. Like
that'd be
that
so great.
just being a badass Wolverine and like Daredevil being like, no, stop it,
That would be awesome.
It's just so interesting, like the whole show, just how I mean, intense it's kind of gotten, especially like because it, the first episode, I was a little worried. I was like, uh-oh, it started off a little rocky for me. Like, I was like, ah, they're kind of trying to. I think they, because what Netflix did when we started watching the first episode of season two, they gave you this recap like film, right? And so I felt like they felt like they didn't need that they had to catch you up on the characters and you kind of like just dived in. But I think you dove in, not dived, you dove in. And then it was a little jarring for me. I was like, oh, okay, we're just gonna do this like right now. But I think by the second episode, I was like, okay, I'm all in. And then by the third, once the Punisher kind of shows up, and I mean he really is like it's just, what did they do with the Punisher? They taxi drivered him, man. They totally, which is what I always like. I don't know about you, but I've always had this sort of fantasy in my brain that like when you die and go to heaven, there are all these movies that never got made that like in your imagination are made, like you get to see in heaven. And one of them would have been Martin Scorsese directing a Punisher movie
Oh my
with
God.
young Robert De Niro, and just
Oh my
like,
God.
and that's what they did. They basically Travis Bickled, Frank
Yeah.
Castle
Oh
is
yeah,
so
they
great.
absolutely did, which is right. I mean, I was never the biggest Punisher fan
Me
in the
neither.
comics. Like, because in the comics he always felt one, like this agent of chaos, and two, sort of one note.
Yeah.
Like, I was never interested in any of the movies because it's just, yeah, he just shoots bad guys. He
Yeah.
looks cool, but he
Yeah.
just shoots bad guys, and like
Yeah.
that's it.
Yeah.
And people, all over my Facebook, people are like, they finally get the Punisher right, and I'm like, no, they've taken the Punisher to a place that like he's never been before. Like, this is darker and weirder, and you're exactly right. Like, the Travis Bickle thing is spot on.
Yeah,
That
yeah.
he's so damaged and fucked up. I think I don't remember this from the comics. It may be something they added in like later on on one of the Max imprints, but the idea that he'd been shot in the head,
I don't recall that either. Yeah,
I
yeah,
think is
yeah.
perfect. Like,
Yeah.
that really drives it home. This idea that like he is actually brain damaged,
Yeah.
and lacking his moral sort of center here is great.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because the one thing that I've always said about like the Punisher movies that, none of them has been really, really great. I think like Punisher Warzone probably could have come close, like as far as like the crazy, insane, like violence that the Punisher instigates, but no one has ever really captured like what is it that drives this guy? You know what I mean? What is it beyond, like, because with the Punisher and sort of like Batman too, you know, there's something that drives them beyond it. And the thing that the Punisher movies always lacked was that the Death Wish movies had, that the Dirty Harry movies always had, was the fact that, you know, these characters were created in a time of New York City where the city was like in decay, and like crime was like, you know, people were getting mugged, raped, like you were terrified. I mean, we kind of grew up like around that or in you know, back east. And the thing that they've just never done in a Punisher movie is present you with a villain or a group of thugs that were just, you know, unrepentant. You know what I mean? They were always sort of cartoonish villains. Like, there was just never something where you were just like, or it should have been like a revenge movie, like I Spit on Your Grave or something like that.
Exactly.
But they never felt they could do that with the Punisher. And they don't, because they needed to keep it like whatever for kids, or so kids can go see it, or teenagers or whatever, but not kids, but teenagers. But the thing that they've done in this is they've kind of done that, but they've really delved into his psyche more. They've really picked up on his intensity. And what's his face? Is it Barenthal?
Barenthal,
yeah. Yeah, he is just, he nails it. And he's physically perfect. Yeah. I mean, maybe he could be a bit more, a bigger, like, physically, but, like, whatever. Facially, I'm just like, wow. He looks like the comic book, like, brought to life.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing he's missing is the skull, and I'm assuming that by the end of the season he's going to get there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming, just given the way that, particularly the way that the, like, the Marvel TV shows have developed, is that, like, that seems to be their thing, is that we're watching the characters put the pieces together.
Sure.
Which is something which we can talk about a little bit with the other introduction in this season that I think is also, I've been more excited about than the Punisher, and that's Elektra, who is like one of the great comic book characters ever, and is also being done really, really well.
It's really interesting because Elektra, it's funny because I have an Elektra nitpick, and this is just me. My Elektra nitpick is that she's too skinny. She has like no muscle tone. Like, I'm like, I can't imagine her like smacking somebody and it like hurting at all. It must be some special ninja moves or something. But it's funny, when I said that to my wife was like, I'll take her body. And I was just like, all right, whatever. You know, I just, that's sort of my only thing, you know, at least with Jennifer Garner, she had some muscle tone on her, but I never saw that movie, Elektra. So.
Oh, it is not good. It's not, honestly, it's not as bad as the Daredevil movie.
Yeah.
It is significantly better than the Daredevil movie, but the Daredevil movie is so bad that I'm not saying the Elektra movie is good. It's just, it's a significant improvement.
Yeah.
I mean, and this I like, I mean, this is the thing about Jennifer Garner is great, and I can totally see why they cast her, but Elodie Young has one that captures the difficult thing about Elektra, because of course, you know,
She's cosmopolitan, right? She reeks of that sort of like foreign, you know, socialite thing, right?
Exactly. It's amazing. I mean, Jennifer Garner is so apple pie, and Elektra naturally cannot be. She has to be cosmopolitan, but also she has the wildness, because the knock against Elektra is that she's just another like crazy chick with a sword.
Yeah.
But they really capture that like thrill-seeking, adrenaline junkie, cool as a cucumber, like practically her first like. The first bit where, you know, she and Matt take down all of the Yakuza guys, and she looks at him and she's like, I'm hungry. Are you hungry?
Yeah,
like, that's right off.
It's like the spoiled little rich girl, and she does a really good job with that. Like, it's and the other thing is that she's really good at is the force of her personality. You know what I mean? And what's really great about their relationship is how you can see how she keeps Matt like on his heels, because he's like, I can't even, you know, when she's like reintroduced into the show, he's like, I'm what? Like, why are you here? Like, this is horrible. It's like every bad girlfriend or bad best friend that you had a falling out with that you haven't forgiven, and you're it nails it like right on the head, and you see the look in Matt's eyes where he's just like, you see what's going on in his head where he's just, you could tell that there's this anger in him, and he's like, what are you doing here? But he has that need for answers that, you know, all, you know, jilted lovers have, right? Which is like, exactly. Why did you leave? You know?
Yeah. How did this go so wrong? And like, and that's the continuing attraction and his inability to get away from her. Like all of that is so well drawn. And particularly Elodie Young, I mean, she is very easy on the eyes. You can absolutely see all of the fascination. And they've taken the character, like, because I think I'm obviously a bit ahead of you, so there are a few, like, late reveals that, like, do some really good work for that character. And do more, make her more than a crazy chick with a sword.
Yeah.
That I like. And tie some of her into the larger mythology that they're laying out really nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the way they've layered in the hand and the chaste, I think has been really good, and is if like even from last season into this season, has been really exciting for them to expand this world in this way.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, how everything sort of ties in, you know, I mean, I've gotten to episode 8 and how there's this sort of web of like what all through Matt's life. Right. Mm-hmm, so, I mean, it's just like really, it's really impressive the way they've thought this out. And, but the thing, again, the thing that just like, she reeks of intelligence. You know what I mean? She's not, and it doesn't come across as fake or like acting or any of that. Mm-hmm. Like obviously the actress herself is probably, you know, very dignified and smart, but she reeks like she's the smartest person in the room. You know what I mean? She's like on at all times, you know, she's street smart. She's, you know, cunning. And it's sort of like, you know, she's kind of like Daredevil's Catwoman. You know what I mean? I mean, but to a more lethal version of it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And a more interesting version than any Catwoman, you know, and that confidence and all of that, like, it's great to see it because, you know, you want Daredevil's romantic foil, and she holds such a huge place in sort of the Daredevil mythos.
Yeah.
Like an even larger place than Karen Page ever held.
Yeah.
That it's great to see her come to life in this way. Yeah. And come to life in this particular like full bodied way.
Yeah.
When it could have definitely gone terribly wrong.
Yeah. You know what I'm missing though? Another nitpick I just thought of one is the size. The daggers. I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, come on, I want to see some dagger fighting. You know what I mean? Like,
cause I know what you mean.
Watching those and even with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I don't even think I've seen somebody in live action fight with those things. So I've always been like, how do those things work? Like, what do you do with them? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, yeah. I know that'll be very exciting. I don't know. I'm holding my tongue a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. No spoilers.
Okay, no spoilers. But I think it's very interesting how she sort of just drops in. But I also felt, do you feel there's a part of me that feels like, because in the comics I always felt that she was sort of like the love of his life. You know what I mean? Like there was sort of a deeper thing there than sort of, you know, fast and loose. Like we had a relationship and it just bombed out. And I feel like that's lacking a little bit in this version of their relationship where when they flash back to them in college, you know, it's sort of like they're getting their kicks. But I don't see that sort of like in-depth emotive thing. The only reason that I believe that it's there is because when she shows up again, he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it gets there. And like, they use the Frank Miller Man Without Fear stuff. This like that sort of not exactly retcon, I don't know if you ever read that particular like it was a limited series
Yeah.
that the show has leaned on pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Certainly in the first season with the look of early Daredevil, with the scarf over his head, they lean on that stuff a bit, and
Okay.
it makes sense, and it reaches that sort of epic. A little too switchbacky between him and Karen because they've also built that really beautifully.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad this season they backed off from the idea that Foggy was interested in her almost entirely. They're like, we're just going to pretend we were not going down that road at all, just to make room for, this great love with Matt and Karen and all of the ways it develops.
Yeah, it's really been sort of really organic the way that has developed for me. Like, I don't feel like it's been forced. I feel like it sort of developed in the first like couple of episodes where you definitely saw like, oh yeah, she's hardcore into Matt at this point. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it developed nicely, from last season. Like last season, you could see the attraction and the interest from both of them.
Sure.
This season, they went like, nope, these two people are really into each other, but they haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm like
yeah.
really rooting for them.
Yeah.
Exciting, which is exciting.
Yeah. It's interesting, to also note that, like, you have these two female characters, and Karen Page, like, in the comics, the original comics, like, she was basically, like, nothing. She was, kind of like a stand-in character, like Betty Brant from, like, Spider-Man or whatever, she, or Lois Lane, not a very interesting character. But this one has sense of like real agency, and like she's a part of the firm, and she's going out and doing the investigating, and she's also the one that kind of ends up sticking up for the Punisher.
Like, and she's got her own sort of like her own things going on. I'd forgotten actually until mid not midway until a couple episodes in, I'd forgotten that she'd actually killed a guy last season that
That's
no one
right.
knows.
Yeah.
And that's still weighing on her. And I was gonna say this about the thing about Elektra and the perfect love is that, Elektra is in some ways the perfect love for like the Daredevil side of Matt
Yeah.
Murdock. And in that, Catwoman way, the sort of chaotic, let's do what we want because we're stronger, faster, and smarter than everyone else. So why shouldn't we just do what we want and have everything we need? And who gives a shit about the consequences side?
Yeah.
Whereas Karen Page gets to be the like moral center, but willing to fight, which is nice.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
that agency on her and her like willingness to stand up for the things she believes in is really encouraging to see.
Yeah, it's really interesting how the two female leads kind of play on both sides of him, and how they tug at like both sides of his life, because there is, I mean, that's sort of the big thing, and what I'm loving about this too is that they're sort of like really sort of getting into Matt's faith a bit. Like, I mean, they did that in the first season, and it's always been something that's present in the comics, and I mean, I never got the feeling that Matt was like a holy roller or whatever, like he was like some evangelist, but he was raised Catholic, like me, and probably, I don't know if you were, but I
No,
mean,
I was not, but
yeah, well, I was raised Catholic. I mean, I went to the local Catholic school in our town, and it's interesting to see him, especially in moments in the show where he needs to fall on it, where he reaches for it. You know what I mean?
They neatly integrated it here without, I mean, that was one of the few things I wasn't a super fan of the first season. Like they're not leaning on bits with the priest too much. He's not going to confession, but it's something that like clearly guides him and clearly that he talks about and is part of who he is. And it's really nice.
I mean, it's just like, oh my God, we need to talk about the mask, like the change, because the mask, the helmet, looks so much better after what happens to it. Like, I mean, obviously, so what is it, the second episode, like, or is it even the first? No, it's the second episode,
Second
right?
episode, yeah.
Second episode where the Punisher like catches him off guard and basically like shoots him in the face, in the
That
head,
was great.
and the helmet protects him, and that he has to go to, what's the guy's name? Buzzsaw in the comics. Melvin. Yeah.
Melvin
yeah.
Potter.
Melvin Potter. Yeah. Yeah. And he needs him to rebuild a helmet. Now, okay, so here's the helmet gets redesigned and the new design is awesome. But see, now this reminds me of one of the things that always frustrated me in the comic. It didn't frustrate me, but I was like, what are you doing? When he shows up at Melvin's and Melvin's like, you kind of need to take a rest. And he's like, he's like, no, I'm going out again tonight. I'm like, oh, geez.
Oh,
you need to stop because
you got to sleep. Buddy.
Yeah, he got shot in the head. And then there's the amazing, I love, because the thing that's great about Daredevil and the show, and was great about the first season, that now sort of legendary hallway fight, where you see that he's fighting, but unlike Captain America, in the movies, Captain America gets tired. Doesn't get tired. Daredevil's breathing hard and stuff like that. Yep.
Getting sloppier and sloppier.
Exactly. But he just keeps going no matter what.
My God.
Yeah. And in this season, it's just what is wrong with you? Seriously, you just got shot in the head. And then showing his physical limitations, where that one amazing scene where I was literally sitting there what's happening to him? What's going on? Where his hearing just goes out and he passes out. That's amazing. Yeah.
He gets overwhelmed, his whole from being shot in the head. Yeah, his hearing and all of his senses either stop or are too sensitive because he's dropping things and he can't modulate it anymore. And that was great. I mean, the brutality they put Matt Murdock through this season is well above what they did last season.
Yeah.
And I was glad that they revisited the hallway fight.
Extended
it down the stairs.
Oh my
god. It just keeps going forever.
That was insanity. I was watching it and I was at first I was like, okay, this looks really great. Yeah, we're doing this again. And then there's a moment where he hits a biker and the biker goes off the stair, and I don't know what they did with the camera, but the biker hits the next level of the stairs and the camera goes shakes and you hear a sound effect and it's
that's where I was those people all have permanent
disability. Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, so the fight choreography this season has been utterly off the chain.
Yeah, oh my gosh,
entirely off the chain in every possible way.
I mean, even beyond that, the stuff between Daredevil and Elektra, it's when they're fighting with each other, when they're fighting other people, it's so well done.
Yeah, it's just great and just thrilling to watch. I mean, it's right up there. I would say that this is, probably the best fight choreography on the air right now. Arrow is a close second.
But Arrow looks like stunt choreography to me, doesn't it? Doesn't it to you?
Yeah.
I mean, Arrow's great. Don't get me wrong. The choreography is I can't do any of that stuff, but I feel like Daredevil, something about it feels like they're really duking it out to a certain extent. Right.
Yes. I mean, there was one episode of Arrow this year that the fight choreography was on a different level. I think it was Lexi Alexander's episode that we were instantly, it was either Lexi Alexander's episode or there was another one that was directed by their fight coordinator, their stunt coordinator, that was next level. But that next level feels like an average episode of Daredevil, where they're just he's just fighting some guys. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, it looks painful, the hits, especially when they're fighting regular people. Not the couple of fights they have with the Hand and the other sort of next generation people. I can't remember if by 8 the Hand has fully emerged.
Well, they've shown up as far as ninjas are concerned. I think this is beyond episode 6, so we're cheating a little bit. But the raining ninjas down was just and the ninjas running over the rooftop. I mean, that almost looked like it was pulled from a Frank Miller comic.
My God.
And just the smoothness with which they move. I mean, it's just fantastic. It's just absolutely brilliant. And
In that sequence, that's the one where they're chasing the cab. It's like we have the hand in now two different versions, because Wolverine, the Wolverine got to use them.
Oh, did they?
I don't think they ever officially called them the hand, but like the sequence in the Wolverine, when he goes to the village and he gets shot up with arrows, is pulled right from the Frank Miller Wolverine miniseries.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then here they are most definitely the hand.
Yeah.
I've always sort of interested in like the weird ways that the Marvel rules break down.
The legal stuff.
Exactly. That like the Avengers gets to keep Scarlet Witch but not Quicksilver.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bizarre how that all that legal stuff worked out, all those deals that got worked out like what in the late 90s to save them from bankruptcy. To be able to see like Wolverine show up in a Daredevil comic, that would just be insane. But I mean, for right now, you know, the thing is the balance that's been struck between introducing the Punisher and Daredevil maintaining a hold on his own show. I mean, so far it's been pretty good. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think a lot of the strength of that too is that beyond the fighting stuff, beyond the violence and the mayhem and stuff, you know, I mean, the last year I said that Daredevil, it's very much like a cross between like something like Arrow and then Law and Order. And and the thing that impresses me about Daredevil is that those courtroom scenes, the scenes where they're stressing out about bills, the scenes where they're hanging out in the bar, they're all just as solid in their own way as the fight scenes, you know, the choreography stuff.
Yeah, it's so impressive. Foggy is great.
Yeah,
I'm not super happy that they made the choice that Foggy knows as early as he does.
Oh, I see.
Rather than Karen, because in the comic books, Karen knew, but Foggy, I think even to this day, Foggy still might not know.
No, I think he knows by now.
I'm not entirely sure with the new Marvel that they might have been like, no, that was... But it was a very, very long time before Foggy figured it out.
Yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
I like him knowing, and I like what it does for their partnership and their friendship. And I'm with you. I think, like, the courtroom scenes... Because mostly they just give Foggy a chance to shine, and that's really nice.
Yeah.
And it's really cool.
It's really great because I think the Foggy relationship works really well, and worked well last year too, especially when he found out, as again being another part of Matt Murdock,
right,
where it's like, what are you doing, man? And it also gives Matt Murdock a reason to sort of stick up for himself, you know what I mean, to be like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because when you have that sort of sounding board of like, you're insane, don't go do this again, you obviously are going to be like some teenage kid and be like, well, this is why I'm doing it, blah, blah, blah. And it, you know, it kind of like gins you up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way it seems to be working in this season, where it's like, you don't understand, you know, like this is, I have to do this, or I'm doing this. And, you know, there's even a point, where you get a sense that he wants to give it up, you know, where he's like, I'm kind of done with what I set out to do. And and then, you know, the Punisher shows up again, you know.
The madness of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. Elektra's return.
Oh, Elektra's return. Yeah, that's another great thing I found about this season. And I know this is an issue... I was talking to a buddy of mine, and I think that this is always an issue with, like, comic book stuff.
Yeah.
That this season feels to me structured more like a comic book than the first season. Because we're not in, like, an origin story, and there's sort of, like, a Punisher arc that comes to kind of an end, and then as soon as that's over, then we're into the Elektra arc.
Yeah, I felt that, too.
And while Punisher's still, like, lurking around, it's mostly the Elektra arc.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Like, I'm really into that. But I know, like, a lot of people, like, I think some of those people who are, like, sophomore slump may not necessarily be, like, the most comic book people. Because it's hard to just get into that, like, this is just a guy, this is just what he does. You know, like Matt Murdock just puts on the suit and goes out and fights bad guys. Yeah. And without necessarily, like, he's got an internal drive, but without a reason. He's not, you know, trying to find the guy who killed his father or whatever.
Well, that's like every superhero, right? Yeah. I mean, every superhero gets to a point where they've come to terms with whoever killed their parents or mm-hmm. how their parents died or what it was. And then they keep going where, you know, that's sort of the inherent ridiculousness of superheroes. Because like if it's you or me or like mm-hmm. Quote unquote real person and you're going out for vengeance or like a vengeance movie or something, right. It's like you get to the end and I've gotten the person that wronged me and that's it, I'm done. But with the superhero, it becomes it extends beyond that. It becomes a thing that they have to keep doing because it gives them sort of like a sense of purpose, you know?
Yeah.
And I think like in the beginning of Daredevil, they really kind of did a good job of like explaining, maybe even the first or two episodes, not explaining it, but showing like what he kind of gets out of it to a certain extent.
Right.
You know, beyond the adrenaline of beating people up, you know?
Right. And I think like this season, it's a little bit less of that to a certain degree,
mm-hmm.
Because he's a bit more at peace with being the Daredevil and like, and at peace with his role. Like he's maybe not sure if it's the right thing or if it's the best thing, but you know, the last season was much more about, can he control himself at all? Can he do this?
Yeah.
This is more, should he? And I feel like that's gives you a little bit less sort of like external juice, that once we're past the origin story, we're into just sort of like comic book guy land, which I like having the arc. I like having, you know, we dealt with the Punisher and now we're dealing with Elektra. And now we're looking to see like, will these two threads overlap or interfere or whatever?
Yeah.
To build on it. But, you know, that's exciting for me.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, and this is something that's been going on in my head, especially the second episode, third episode, when Daredevil is chained up and they're having their mm-hmm. debate about like, you know, the comic book stuff. And the thing that, you know, it's like, I wonder, because you've said like, yeah, Daredevil, you're really kicking the crap out of people and, you know, you're probably maiming some people. and it's just interesting because they haven't really, you know, part of the Punisher's thing, right, was always mm-hmm. like that the system is messed up. Like the system is not going to take care of this. I'm going to take care of this. And, you know, when they get the Punisher on the stand, he does a little bit of that, you mm-hmm. know, but he's... There's no really, and this is kind of what would have made a little more sense to me in the debate between them. Because for me, it's like, you know, like I'm a Superman guy, right? Like for me, it's like, yeah, you want to believe that, everyone has a potential to achieve something good in their life. It's just the system that fails them. They're born into bad circumstances. Or they make the wrong choices and has no one to guide them, whatever. But in reality, you know, I mean, as we know, you know, the prison mm-hmm. system is beyond disrepair. Politicians are corrupt, blah, blah, blah. Go on and on and on. People are being jailed for 20, 30 years for having marijuana on them. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And the thing is like, yeah, what I would have liked to see the Punisher address or somebody even say is be like, look, you can believe what you want to believe. Like you can mm-hmm. say like everyone has a light in them, you know, like, and to me, like a perfect example would be sort of like, and this may be messed up, it's like Malcolm X, right? He starts off as a pimp, a drug dealer, you know, whatever. And, you know, and then he becomes the leader of, you know, the Muslim nation and, mm-hmm. you know, and he changes his life for whatever politics but that is a rare example. But if you're existing in today's society, do you get that opportunity? If you go to jail, like,
do you even have that opportunity?
Is society looking out for you? Is society trying to help the people? And that to me is a stronger argument than like, no, they're all scum. They just need to die. And Daredevil's like, no, everyone has a light in them. And I'm like,
right.
Well, somewhere in between is kind of the truth. But
yeah.
In today's system, is that going to work? It does. Is anybody going
to
help them?
It to work?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, beyond the Punisher beating them up and sending them to jail, like, and that was always what was great about the Daredevil comics, because he would beat them up, send them to jail, and then try and help some people
right.
who had been either victimized or whose crimes, you know, who he had sympathy, you know,
yep.
on. And that's sort of not here. It's just sort of like a very black and white argument. And, you know, the Punisher to me would be the guy who's like, the system doesn't work no matter what yeah. you do. So I might as well just kill them and take them out. No matter
yeah,
what you
yeah,
do.
They're not, the system's not going to save them or make them any better. They're going to be like, I think there's some talk about that. Like they're just going to wind up back on the street or whatever.
Yeah.
And all of that. And I think you're right. Cause I mean, some of the more compelling Daredevil stories, I was just thinking, I just got it back from storage down in Texas. There's an issue after, I mean, spoilers for a 35-year-old comic, after, you know, he paralyzes Bullseye.
Yeah.
There's this issue where he goes to visit him
mm-hmm.
with a revolver and is playing Russian roulette.
I kind of remember this. Yeah.
And telling him the story about a corrupt, not a cop, but like a corrupt councilman
yeah.
that he brought down. But in bringing down this corrupt councilman, he like totally corrupted the guy's kid who idolized Daredevil, and the kid wound up bringing a gun to school and shooting a classmate.
Yeah.
Because he watched Daredevil beat his dad up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the end of it, like it's got God, Frank Miller, man. Frank Miller is such a dark dude.
Yeah.
Because in the end, you know, it gets down to like the last chamber of the gun. And Daredevil pulls the trigger, but there's nothing in it. He's like, at the end of the day, my gun has no bullets. Like he still can't just kill people like Bullseye or even this guy, this kid's father for, you know, doing terrible things because he knows the larger consequences of being that person. And I think that's sort of where they're going for. And I hope that that's where they get to. I've got to imagine they will eventually introduce Bullseye and give us that storyline.
Can you imagine?
That's just amazing, right? Like yeah. all of that is wonderful.
Yeah. And Daredevil, I mean, Bullseye is a fantastic villain. I mean,
yeah.
you know, what he does and what he can do. I mean,
yeah.
it'd just be so interesting to play that out and how he can push Daredevil's buttons, you know?
Mm-hmm. And to like give us that person who is, you know, a total agent of chaos who just does not give a shit about anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And about anyone's rules or any consequences.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That'll be so much fun, especially if I haven't gotten there, so I'm assuming, especially if they keep Elodie Young around as Elektra somehow.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that would be so great.
You know, it's so funny because, again, skipping a little bit ahead to, like, Styx's episode when Styx shows up, you know, obviously if you're listening to this, spoilers, but and the trailers have already given it away, but there's a part of me that when I saw Elektra and Styx, like, mm-hmm. together on the screen talking to each other, I was like, oh, my God, spinoff.
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
Can you imagine those two characters, spinning off into their own thing? You know?
Absolutely. I want more Scott Glenn Styx.
Yeah, I know. He's so badass. It's great. Like, and it's, you know, what's also funny, too, is I feel that, you know, getting back to the Punisher a little bit, I feel mm-hmm. that, you know, the danger with the Punisher and the Batman, you know, the thing is like, and so much, and we saw it happen in the 80s and the 90s, and still to this day is like, you know, so many people think these characters are quote unquote cool. And it's mm-hmm. because they're just reduced to sort of, in a lot of people's eyes, this sort of simplistic element of like what they are, which is like, I kick the crap out of bad guys, you know, like I'm merciless. I have no mercy, blah, blah, blah. And obviously there's a segment of teenage boys or even young adults that think that that's just like the most incredible thing ever. And you know, the danger for me is always like idolizing sort of this, I wouldn't say nihilistic, but I don't know what the term I'm looking for in my head is, character. And I think what they've really done with this, and that they've never done in any Punisher comics that I've had the opportunity to read, they've really delved into the tragedy of the character. You know what I mean? They've really delved into the thing of like, I had a family. Like, oh my God, let's just talk about that freaking monologue when he's at, when they're at the graveyard in like what, episode 4 or something.
Yeah.
Like practically on the verge of tears. Like, and that's it. Like, that's the thing is, I don't even know in the comics that they've given him that. They probably have somewhere, maybe Grant Morrison or something. But,
maybe.
You know, it's just
so
like
heartbreaking.
It's like they've finally shown like that this character is not just like anger and hate and whatever. It's pain. You know what I mean? It's an emotional pain that just will not go away, that he can't get rid of. You know what I mean? And just the whole thing of like, I went to the war and I was never afraid of the war. And I only became afraid when I got back, and I was afraid of having the rug pulled out from under my life. And it's just like, in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And like, and you're right. They do a very good job of not romanticizing him, of focusing on the pain and the suffering and the sort of heartache of the Punisher in a way that that hasn't been captured before, and that, that I think keeps it from being romanticized, badass with the cool skull on his chest.
Yeah.
And he just looks cool, so that's all we need.
Yeah.
And they've really created a character who's deeply flawed and deeply hurt and scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
not someone you want to be at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think they've really grasped, I mean, they, you know, this show more than, you know, any other sort of Punisher comic that I've, again, that I've had the chance to read, because I haven't read tons of them, you know, has really gotten to the core of that character more, in a more nuanced way than I've ever seen, you know, in a way that sort of like makes you care about the guy, sort of the way I've cared about Batman in the past.
Yeah.
Where I've been
exactly.
like, I get it. Like, I really get this. Because like you said, I, for a long time, and there is, I mean, one of my favorite comic miniseries in the 80s was the Punisher miniseries written by Stephen Grant and illustrated by Mike Zack. It's a great miniseries. But, you know, again, as a whole, the Punisher was always sort of one note, like you said.
Right.
Very sort of like, yeah, I'm just a killer and I just take out bad guys and I've got Uzis and whatever. And, you know, but here, the, for the first time ever, it's like, I sympathize with you.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, like I see where your pain is coming from. As to whether what you're doing is right or not, like, I think in today's society, you know, in a weird sort of way, because everything's sort of so comfortable, as opposed to like when the character was created, it's easy to say like you're doing the wrong thing. But, you know, in the era of Death Wish and Dirty Harry, maybe a lot of people would still be behind him.
And Bernie Getz, I mean, don't forget, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, and that's another thing that the show has done really well between these two seasons is create an atmosphere where that's okay.
Yeah.
Where that is the world that they're in, that in the sort of post Avengers.
Brilliant.
You know, it's interesting because like right now, the sort of three Marvel, like it's all part of the MCU.
Yeah.
Technically, but they feel so different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between the Netflix shows, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and the movies.
Yeah.
That they don't really feel like they're quite the same universe. But, you know, that it allows, like the, like we said, you know, the sort of hangover from an alien attack in New York City has created this much more dangerous, much darker city that both Daredevil and Jessica Jones inhabit.
Yeah.
In a really nice way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does not, but that's
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it feels like it's, I think it's been renewed, and it feels like it's getting there. You know, I mean, not to the darkness of Daredevil, but I'm like, really, guys? Like 3 years to get to the point of where it's like, I actually am like interested, like really interested in watching your show? Not where it's like super great, but not to trash Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's come a long way.
It's come a long way. Yeah. And they've let it become its own thing, which is really nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can I tell you that every time I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they're talking about like Inhumans and humans are a danger, Inhumans, they have powers, Inhumans, I'm like, it breaks my heart that it's not mutants, because it, you know, it should so be mutants. It should. I'm sitting there like, oh, why does Fox have the rights to the X-Men? It just like breaks my heart.
Because every time
they say the term Inhuman on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I hear mutant. I'm like, mutant. I'm like,
that's what you're saying. That's what you're...
I know, that's exactly what I'm thinking. But, you know, I agree with you. It's one of the things that I loved, because, you know, you and I grew up, like, you know, late 70s, 80s, around Manhattan. I lived in the city for a short while, like as a kid, and I know that you lived in it as an adult for a long time. And you know, the fact
as a kid, I spent my first 10 years in Brooklyn. And
okay. See, I didn't know that.
It's terrifying. Holy crap.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't the greatest place to live. You know, I remember even, you know, when we lived in Jersey and going in via subway or car or whatever to visit relatives, you know, grandparents and uncles and stuff like that. And it was, you felt it. Like there was a dread that hung over the city. And especially being a little kid, you were like, oh my God, if my hand lets go of my hand in the subway, I'm totally screwed. Like this
that's it. You're gone. Yeah. You're lost,
somebody's going to kill me. And I think that that explanation of the alien invasion just like decimating the city was really a smart move, you know, because now, because that was the thing that I always wondered. I thought that Daredevil might be a period piece, you know, and all this stuff, because they were saying that they fight in Hell's Kitchen. I'm like, Hell's Kitchen ain't exactly Hell's Kitchen anymore, kids.
Nope.
You know what I mean? But they figured out a way. They did a really good job. And the city itself, you know, the kitchen, you know, as they love to call it. I mean, it's become sort of like its own character, right?
Yeah, very much. Like it definitely inhabits it, and it lives by its own rules, so it all makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of buy this like almost comical assortment of very, very colorful gangs
and
groups. You know, they introduce all these gangs here, but it still really works. Like, I thought the Irish gangs and the way that they use them
in
the first episodes were terrifying and weird and so dark.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I thought, like, watching the biker gang, I'm like, somebody likes Sons of Anarchy on this show, you know? Either way, I mean, they've really, with this and Jessica Jones, they've built like a version of, it seems like this version of Manhattan, New York, is something that I kind of recognize from the past and in the present, like at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate it, you know, watching it. It gives me a New York feel. Like when I watch it, I miss, you know, home. I'm like, oh man, like I miss New York, you know, even though I've lived here for like, God, almost 25 years, but still, you know, I do miss it. And it gives me that, I don't feel like it's shot in Canada. You know what I mean? It's so good that it's shot in New York City. But I mean, this is great. Like I'm ready to watch the second half. I don't know. My mom's coming to visit, so I don't know how much time I'm going to have to watch, but you know, there's always next week I can, you know, try and catch up on it. So Daredevil season 2, part 1. I personally am loving it, and sounds like you are too.
Absolutely. I can't wait. I literally am going to get off the call here and finish it right now. So I cannot wait to see how it turns out.
Sounds great. Well, this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn, and I am with my friend Jason Holtham, who also has a podcast called Deep Cut Nerd.
That's right.
Which Deep you Cut should Nerd. Listen to. And we will hopefully be back next week. I know that the big event is Batman versus Superman, but I'm one of the, I guess, I don't know, silly holdouts that doesn't feel like seeing the movie. So we're going to do something else next week. We're not doing Daredevil Part 2 is coming like in 2 weeks. Because I thought we would need more time to watch it. But but next week we're going to do something different. And so we'll leave it as a surprise. And in the meantime, I know that you and I, you'll be at WonderCon, right?
I will be at WonderCon. WonderCon on Saturday. Looking forward to it.
I'm going to WonderCon too. And hopefully, you know, wrestle up some interviews. And and just check us out on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Please review us on iTunes. It would be nice to have at least one review. I don't know why we don't have any reviews. Anyway, maybe, you know, even if you hate it, I just want an opinion. But anyway, all right. So this has been Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening. And we will be back with another episode soon. Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.